we have time constraints, ladies and gentlemen, and I propose we start with the business of the day. Welcome to our friends from the Judicial Inspectorate, our friends from the media, the Minister and her department, and members of the committee. We're hoping to have a short meeting today. The intention, really, if you look at the agenda, is for the Minister and DCS to introduce to talk to us about a piece of legislation or amendment that is to be referred to us very, very shortly. Really just for members to familiarize themselves, for us to kickstart the process of doing the necessary in terms of advertising for public comments, and to get stuck into it as soon as we get back in 2011. So it'd be really an introduction, the intention of the legislation or the amendments. We're not going to debate or discuss the bill or crossing the I's and dotting the T's, really just to familiarize ourselves with it. And the Minister then and the National Commission have asked to be excused because they've got commitments immediately thereafter. And then if we could request the committee to remain just for about 10 minutes so that we can talk about the proposed program for next year, for its adoption, so that we can ask Cindy to start doing the necessary. So we shouldn't be too long in our business. The agenda that was circulated talks about the briefing on matters to enhance parole, but I think that is covered in the legislation anyway, so that can be combined with the introduction. And briefing by the NCCS on the outcome of the medical parole review. That also, I think, is covered by the legislation. So all those will be covered in one. We're not going to have three separate briefings, so it's all in one. Minister, welcome, you and your team. We will immediately hand over to you and your team, if you could. I'm hoping that members have got copies of the documents you're talking about. Cindy has circulated them. Thank you very much, Minister. Can we hand over to you and your team?
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. And morning, Chair, and morning, honorable members and the team from DCS. Chairperson, mine is going to be very brief. The only reason why I'm here is because we have to present a piece of legislation to you and the remand detention white paper. Otherwise, this morning is cabinet day, so I have to go back to cabinet. Chair, perhaps it's important to start by explaining to honorable members why there was a delay with regards to processing the medical parole issues, in particular the amendment to the Act. Honorable members will recall that we had committed ourselves that this year this new policy will be introduced, not just introduced, but will also be implemented. Indeed, the judge decide process and the processes within the ministry were completed by February, hence the invitation extended to honorable members to attend a round table which we had convened in Pretoria Central to discuss this matter. However, at that point, our attention was drawn to the fact that we probably needed to wait until such time the white paper on remand detention had been completed, so that some elements of remand which appear in the piece of in our legislation can then be amended. Honourable members are probably aware of the fact that there was a decision which was taken in January 2006 by the Cabinet Lekgotla that DCS should produce a white paper on remand detention. That process only began last year in September. We set up an interdepartmental task team consisting of the police, NIA, correctional services, the Department of Justice. And that is a team that then is responsible for the production of this piece of work on remand detention. I will not talk to the white paper, save to say that colleagues are aware that the whole area of remand detention is an area that has had very serious challenges within the JCPS cluster. However, that work resides with, and we had to make sure that there is some kind of regulatory framework that would guide us in our performing our responsibility with regard to remand detainees. And that is what we are introducing this morning. Well, we are also introducing, Chair, the amendments to the Correctional Services Act, a bill that we thought could actually be passed before the Parliament rises this year. However, we now realize that it's going to be impossible to do that. But in that bill, you'll recall, Chair, that we committed ourselves to amending the medical parole as it currently stands. We have amended, and we are bringing a piece of legislation that provides for a new definition on medical parole. But not only that, the piece of legislation also seeks to strengthen the entire parole system, and in the process repeals the incarceration framework. And then, of course, the third aspect is this element of remand. So we have both here this piece of legislation, the bill that we are introducing to Parliament, but also this white paper on remand detention. Chair, the National Commissioner is here. The National Commissioner is accompanied by a team of people, some of whom were responsible for the drafting of this white paper, who certainly will be able to elaborate on all aspects of that remand detention white paper. But I do want to say that we are addressing 4 to 5 critical issues in the remand detention white paper, starting with classification of inmates as they come into the center. Secondly, we are considering to provide uniform to inmates, even those who are on remand detention, a uniform that will be clearly distinct from that of the convicted inmates. This, in the main purpose, is to deal with people who come from destitute families, but also to for security reasons, to minimize possibilities of an escape. I'm sure all the members will remember that when there was an escape in Harry Smith of 41 people, they were all in civilian clothing. And our view is that if they had been in some form of uniform, it would have probably been easy. Of course, the first prize is to prevent people from escaping from custody. Second prize, obviously, would be to put them in uniform, of course, different from those who are convicted. We are also trying to push for a position where there is a limit to the detention or incarceration of people in our facilities whilst they are still on remand. Currently, the state of affairs is such that we have people who have been in our facilities for 5 to 7 years. We have people who have been there for 3-4 years. We have scores, and these tend to be people, particularly the 3 to 4 years category, 3 years in particular, tend to be in the majority of people who are on remand in our facility. And we are seeking the South African public to support us in having a clear stipulation, determination that people should be in our facilities on remand strictly for 24 months and no more. for as long as they have not been found guilty. So it actually puts a bit of pressure on all of us, on all stakeholders, the police, justice, and the Department of Correctional Services, to make sure that whatever work needs to be done before a case is concluded, that it is done with speed. As I said, Chair, we've accepted with the fact that Parliament rises on the 17th and that it may be difficult for you to call for public hearings between now and the 17th, and therefore it will be difficult for Parliament to pass this piece of legislation before the end of the year. But I want to plead with honourable members, as members are looking into the programme for next year, that if it is possible that honourable members should prioritise this piece of legislation. I'm sure honourable members are aware of the challenges that we have at our centres, challenges of scores of people who are very sick and who obviously will be provided with an opportunity to appear before the parole boards on medical grounds. Whether they will be granted medical parole or not is another matter. But it will at least allow a situation where people can be considered. We have, as I say, big numbers of people in different centres, different provinces, who are in a situation where they are totally incapacitated, and that's what this medical bill, medical parole, seeks to address. So I will not go into the definition, Chair, of all of these. The National Commissioner, together with his team, will go into detail about each one of the amendments that we are proposing. Safe to say that, indeed, we want to make an appeal that next year, that this is a matter that is up on the priority on the agenda of the portfolio committee because of its sensitivity. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
And of course, Minister, if you to leave whenever you'd like to, Minister. But let's hand over then to the National Commissioner and his team.
Chairperson, honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, Minister present, I am accompanied by a team of colleagues from Correctional Services. Colleagues will introduce themselves, so the committee should be able to identify who they are. I'll start from the colleague who's presenting the slideshow. Thanks, and then we go from the back.
Morning, I'm Alani Dawla from the regional office. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Lorette Lowe, Minister's Legal Advisor.
Good morning, I'm Louis Sochafta, seconded from State Security Agency to Correctional Services.
Good morning, James Smallberger, Correctional Services, Regional Commissioner, Western Cape.
Good morning, I'm Sharon Jabulile Gunene, Deputy Commissioner, Social Reintegration, Head Office.
Good morning, I'm Paxton, Director, Court Enforcement.
Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, we are here to present yourselves a high-level presentation on the Corrections Matters Amendment Bill 2010. The Minister has given a briefing on this matter. I will therefore take you through the process through the slideshow that you have before us. The proposed amendments, the bill seeks to improve the administration of three key areas of corrections, namely, one, to strengthen the parole system in general, two, to provide a new medical parole system, and finally, provide further for the management of remand detainees. The bill also repeals all provisions referring to the development of incarceration framework and instead addresses shortcomings with the functioning of the parole systems within the framework of the existing Act. It also deals with the incarceration framework not workable for the following reasons. One, the development of a third parole system in South Africa is highly undesirable and unworkable. Questions have been raised as to the legal standing of the processes set out for the adoption of the proposed incarceration framework. And finally, no version of an incarceration framework could practically achieve the desired outcomes stipulated. The medical parole system, also looked into Section 79 of the Act, currently limits the granting of medical parole to sentenced offenders who are in the final phase of a terminal illness. It also looks into medical practitioners who are reluctant to recommend placement on medical parole within this limited definition. This reluctance can also be attributed to media and societal pressures associated with such recommendations, since 60% of inmates do not pass away after placement on medical parole. As a result, many seriously ill or similarly incapacitated inmates currently do not qualify for medical parole. The department also records a high number of natural deaths each year. On this particular point, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, in our interaction with yourselves and the visit that you had during the course of this year, this matter has been raised with us, and we have indicated the problems that we face with respect to this matter. This scenario, therefore, puts serious pressure on already limited financial and human resources required to meet the health care needs of inmates. The bill introduces a new medical parole system which aims to balance the medical condition of the inmates against the risk posed to society should such inmate be placed on medical parole. Three factors must be present to qualify for consideration for placement on medical parole. One, the inmate should suffer from a terminal illness or be rendered physically incapacitated as a result of injury, disease or illness so as to severely limit daily activities, or the inmate is unable to take care of himself or herself. And the risk of reoffending must be so low, and therefore there must be appropriate arrangements for the inmate supervision, care and treatment upon release. The medical parole that we're proposing is not to be cancelled simply because of a change in offender's medical condition, but the usual provisions of the cancellation of parole are equally applicable here, such as the violation of the conditions of community corrections. The draft white paper on remand detention, existing policy framework remains valid, albeit with material gaps and misalignments. The Criminal Procedure Act, Number 51 of 1977, of the Extradition Act, Number 67 of 1962, render the concepts awaiting trial detainees or ATD, pre-trial detainees and unsentenced offenders inappropriate. The proper definition, therefore, of the function is remand detention and remand detainees. Chairperson, for the purpose of us explaining the hub that we have there, I'll be able to take you through. I was trying to see whether my highlighter is able to show where we'll be starting. First, we'll look into the core of the center. The draft white paper comes about consequent to the decision of Cabinet that correctional services, in order to improve the management of awaiting trial detainees, should establish a dedicated branch for managing awaiting trial detainees. Briefly, through the draft white paper, the department seeks to improve the policy framework that currently governs the management of awaiting trial detainees. Let me take a pause here for a minute, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'll start from, if you look at the ring there, I'll give the definition on the center, and then I'll start on the administration, on the definition, the mandate for remand detention, and we'll go clockwise. At the outset, we should state that the existing policy framework governing the management of awaiting detainees broadly remains valid. Examples in this regard include the rationale and legislated procedures governing awaiting trial detention. The department with a mandate for remand detention, the code of conduct and the attendant procedures, measures for security, oversight, mechanisms, and systems for accountability. Notwithstanding the above comment, it is also a fact that the existing policy framework has material gaps and misalignment, The presentation therefore will tend to focus on the proposal that should solve the gaps and misalignments. With respect to the definition that we're dealing with at the core, in the first instance, the proposal is that the concepts are awaiting trial detainees, pre-trial detainees, and unsentenced detainees are on the surface misleading, since the law, particularly the Extradition Act, does not exclusively provide detention with a view to holding and concluding and conclusion of a trial. Extradition hearings are only inquiries into whether or not the party in question is eligible for surrender to the requesting state. Such hearings do not go into the merits and the demerits of the alleged crime. Therefore, it is proposed that the proper definition of this function must be remand detention, and the people managed there are remand detainees. We'll go into the first area. It's called mandate. It's the blue area on your right, which says mandate, remand detainee, DCS, SUPS, DSD, and DOH, and we'll go clockwise. Mandate for remand detention. In short, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, the responsibility for remand detention is shared principally by four departments: Correctional Services, SUPS, Department of Social Development, in respect to children in trouble with the law, and the Department of Health in respect of remand detainees with health challenges. The draft white paper therefore seeks to improve the management of remand detention across the various departments, and in this regard, it puts due emphasis on the imperative of integration. On the second slice, admissions. The first area needing improvement is the admission process, where we need alerts on the numbers of people to be processed for admission at remand detainees. This has to do with the police, because when people are arrested, we need to be able to know who is coming to our facilities. And therefore, that classification and the process of who is coming to our facility need to be brought to our attention. This is important for logistical reasons. How many beds should be availed? How much food has to be prepared? How many medical officers should be on duty in order to properly examine all the persons to be admitted? Yet on the other hand, the alert should profile for us the people who are due to be admitted. For us to be better prepared for the best mechanisms for changing high risk remand detainees. The case in point here, Chairperson, the Portfolio Committee, is the Harry Smith case, wherein we found amongst those who ran away from our facilities and evaded, most of them were high-profile criminals. And the fact of the matter is that when able to reclassify these people according to the type of crimes, and that facility, for this reason and for this purpose, was not supposed to be able to keep this type of people. If we go to the third segment, risk management. Flowing from the above are the proposal that an appropriate risk management system is required that would be underpinned by a classification of certain crimes so that they should automatically attract high-risk classification of remand detainees, and the need to accommodate and manage high-risk remand detainees in designated high-risk remand facilities. On the fourth segment, provision of distinct clothing to remand detainees, as the Minister has indicated, we also propose that remand detainees should be provided with clothing they should wear, provided that such clothing is distinct from that which is provided for inmates saving the custodial penalties. This proposal is intended to bolster security on one hand and provide decent and humane clothing for destitute remand detainees. The Minister spoke about this matter. Had we had at this particular point in Harry Smith remand detainees who are in our facilities in the manner in which they escaped, the public could have been able to identify these people should not be where they are at that time of the day. And therefore, it is for this reason, therefore, we are proposing the provision for distinct clothing to remand detainees. Segment number five, improve surrender to the police for further investigation. We propose that the surrender of remand detainees to the police for further investigation needs to include a role for the prosecutors and the courts that would have ordered remand detention in the first place. Further, the surrender should be for a limited period of 7 days, which should be extended subject to proper motivation. On segment number 6, service for remand vulnerable groups. The white paper proposes a special dispensation for remand detainees with disabilities and those who are aged, so that we should have separate accommodation, additional visits by family, and additional examination by medical practitioners. This is intended to eliminate and minimize any abuse that other inmates can visit upon them and account on our vulnerabilities attending to these groups. The 7th segment deals with identity swap, which is an issue that we need to deal with appropriately. We are proposing as a department that identity swaps by prisoners be criminalized. This would be an addition to other infractions that are so categorized in the Correction Services Act, number 111 of 1998, as amended. Segment number 8, time limit to remand detention. We have had situations where some remand detainees spent up to 7 years in remand detention. Quite a large number of these spent 24 months and above in remand detention. The extremes in this regard considerably negate the notion that remand detention should not be punitive and that it should be fair and reasonable. Consequent to this, we are proposing that 2 years be the maximum period that a person can remain in remand detention. The proposal provides for an extension of this period and other conditions that should attend any release once the prescribed period elapses. On segment number 9, improve the management of information. A framework is proposed for managing information that is available on remand detention, on remand detainees, service providers, the means and methods employed to guarantee security around the management of information on remand detainees. On segment number 10, uniform redress for all children in remand detention. Chairperson and the members of the Portfolio Committee, this was an issue which you had raised with us when we met at LOCOP. The Child Justice Act provides measures for redress to children in detention in police cells. What we propose is that such measures should be evenly available to all children in detention, including those detained in remand detention facilities and those detained in child and youth care centers. Segment number 11, release on account of acute health condition. A framework is proposed that should enable the release of remand detainees on account of health conditions. Such release, as is proposed here, would be attended by several conditions and safeguards, the better to ensure that interests of the administration of justice are not unduly compromised. Currently, no legislative exists that permits for this for remand detainees. The existing system only attends inmates serving custodial penalties. On segment number 12, awareness programs for remand detainees. There is a proposal that remand detainees, notwithstanding the presumption of innocence attended to them, should nevertheless be provided with anti-crime awareness programs and awareness programs that inform them about opportunities that the state avails to all people in the Republic of South Africa. On segment number 13, proscription of inquiries and penalties attending to minor infractions. Minor infractions committed by remand detainees attract inquiries and, when found guilty, penalties are imposed. All this is already provided for in the Correctional Services Act No. 111 of 1998. What we are proposing is that such inquiries and the serving of the relevant penalties should be prescribed immediately after the remand detention of the particular remand detainee comes to an end. On segment number 14, overlap with national security. The white paper outlines the important overlap that exists between remand detention and certain aspects of the national security. For instance, Section 9 of the Regulation of Interception of Communication Act correctly enables the department to monitor communication by and with people in correctional facilities, including remand detention facilities, including remand detention facilities. It is important that the management of the relationship is underpinned by the circumspection so that national security considerations do not overwhelm the interest of the administration of justice, which is the core business of remand detention. On segment number 15, which deals with capacity, significant investment are required to enhance the capacity around remand detention, particularly in respect to training and development of officials on one hand, and in respect of infrastructure on the other. On segment number 16, protocols with stakeholders. Remand detention is a function that is carried out by correctional services, the police, the Department of Social Development in respect of children in trouble with the law, and the Department of Health in respect of ill remand detainees. It is therefore important that protocols should be developed among the relevant role players, in part, to ensure that whereas detention standards will be differentiated, they nevertheless remain, they need to be even in certain aspects. Similarly, other protocols are required with role players outside the government, notably those that provide services to remand detention site facilities and those providing services to remand detainees. On segment number 17, closure of files. We are proposing mechanisms for ensuring that files on persons in remand detention all have proper closure. Currently, it often happens that some files remain with no proper closure, even when the particular persons have properly left the remand detention. In conclusion, Chair and Member of Portfolio Committee, in order to properly give effect to the proposal outlined in the White Paper and the draft bill, they will have to be submitted to Parliament for consideration and ratification, which we have. We therefore wish to receive your comments and your appreciation on this matter, so that the White Paper, once it has gone through all the processes for the purposes that we have outlined above, it is given the due process that it deserves. We have therefore recommended that the following should be taken to note. The background to the White Paper on remand detention. Note that in broad terms, the existing policy framework remains valid, notwithstanding material gaps and misalignment. The Department of Correctional Services has a mandate for remand detention, that we approve the proposal that remand detention and remand detainees should be the formal definition of the function and the affected person, and that the measures that were proposed intend to improve admissions in our facilities, and then the classification of remand detainees are the imperatives to accommodate high-risk remand detainees in designated high-risk remand detention facilities should be an issue that we take very seriously. And that the detainees should be provided with a unique clothing in order to improve security and provide decent clothing for remand detainees who are totally destitute. Also to look into the Section 28(2) of the Child Justice Act should be available to all children in detention, not just children in detention police custody. And that services that are proposed for vulnerable groups within the remand detainees should be taken care of. And that we should be improving the process of surrender of remand detainees to the police for further investigation in a proper fashion. And that we look into the limit of time permissible for remand detention to be 2 years, together with the provision that should enable for an extension of 2 years period in time. And we are also looking in terms of the investigation and penalties attending minor infractions by remand detainees should prescribe once remand detainees for the affected remand detainees come to an end. And that we should have improving management and access of information on facilities, and that we should recriminalize the identity swap by remand detainees in our facilities, and also create an enabling condition to access anti-crime awareness programs and awareness programs on services for state provides for advancement of those who are in our facilities. We're also looking into creating an enabling environment to release of remand detainees on account of very adverse health conditions. And we propose that appropriate protocols should be put in place and to be developed on agreed to all relevant areas of remand detention. This chair covers the plethora of things that we wanted to put to yourself for your noting and for your discussion with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
and to the minister in absentia. Maybe just from the offset, I have no doubt that the objectives of the white paper and the bill will be supported by the committee, the objectives, because we've always been fighting about what was then awaiting trial, remand detainees now, the management thereof, the length of time that they spent, and the things that you're addressing. In terms of the detail, I think we accept your rationale that you want, for instance, uniforms to separate them, whether we agree with it or disagree with it or what the public think about it is something that we don't have to discuss now, as long as we understand what it is that you were hoping to achieve by it. We will obviously come back to you after having considered it ourselves, considered what the public outside thinks about it. But broadly speaking, I think in the main we would support it. I don't want to preempt what members say. Just in terms of our program that hopefully the committee will adopt later on, we anticipate, all things being equal, that by mid-February we should be able to come back to you and to South Africa broadly as the portfolio committee and say this is what we think about it. So the process will unfold for the next month. And mid-February we should be able to have a final consideration and adoption. But in between those, we would obviously interact with yourselves and many other stakeholders in the process. But if the committee accepts our program for next year, we anticipate that round about the middle of February next year, we should be able to have a position to take to Parliament. So I want to open it up to members just for comment. Again, I want to emphasize we're not debating this matter, whether whatever. We just to ask the portfolio, the department, I beg your pardon, for questions of clarity so that we understand what their intentions are, so that when we interact with the public and interact with everybody else, we have an understanding of what their intentions are. So we're not going to open up for serious debate other than questions of clarity. I note Mr. Sal, and then Baban Dovu and Mamungwenya, and Mr. Max. Mr. Self, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to the department for the explanation. I just likewise would like some clarity on some aspects of the presentation. And I understand why amendments have been brought on the issue of medical parole. But what I would like to know from the department is what their thinking was behind that bullet point that said medical parole is not to be cancelled simply because of a change in an offender's medical condition. Because, you know, as we all know, there's at least one offender who underwent a miraculous recovery. But in other jurisdictions, notably in Canada and the United Kingdom, people who are released on medical parole who get better can be reincarcerated. If the intention is, as you say, to release people who are, you know, suffering from some sort of terminal disease, and then they get better, it seems to me that the proximate cause for that person to be released on medical parole has disappeared. And that therefore it stands to reason that that person should be reincarcerated to complete the sentence. The second question relates to the incarceration framework. And I remember very vividly when we debated the Act in 2007 and 2008, the intention behind the incarceration framework was precisely to shut down the distinction that existed between the two parole regimes, the one prior to 2004 and the one subsequent to 2004, so that everybody was in the same camp, if you like, and that what the intention was then to look at categories of offences, whether they were committed prior or subsequent to 2004, and to make sure that everybody was treated in the same way for the same offences. That was the idea behind the incarceration framework. Now, I hear that it is, according to the explanation, impractical to try and do that, but I don't know why it's impractical to do that. And what worries me even more, because I don't know whether you get the same correspondence that I get, but I get hundreds of letters of people who say, why aren't they being released, and they did this and they did that before 2004, after 2004. And if I'm getting those bits of correspondence, then I had to think what the parole boards are getting and the case management committees are getting. And it seemed to me that the incarceration framework was an honest attempt to get beyond that problem and to create a uniform system. My third question relates to remand detention, and I hear what you say, and one of the most encouraging things is the risk management of awaiting trial detainees, or remand detainees as they're now going to be called, because, you know, you can get very, very serious offenders being incarcerated with first-time offenders, with, you know, people of different risk categories in the same environment. It's a danger for the officials, it's a danger for everybody. But I heard you to say that the risk management would be done on the basis of the crimes for which they were arrested. And it seems to me that a far more compelling circumstance would be the crimes for which they had previously been committed. Because if you have somebody who, for example, has been paroled after serving a sentence for murder, and they get rearrested for housebreaking, then what you want to do is you want to take both housebreaking and murder into account when you do a risk management profile of the remand detainee, so as to properly place that person. So I'd just like the department's comments on that, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's take Baba Ndlovu, and then maybe we'll ask the department to respond to those, and then we'll follow up with Mam Gwenya and Mr. Max. Baba Ndlovu.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I just want to get the understanding of the 24 months maximum in detention. It always the case that the coordination within the departments, it enlarges the people who are staying in incarceration when they are not supposed to be there. Is there any understanding that this time frame will apply? Because there is no need to have this time frame only to come back and say that no. We think that we're running short of it. We should increase it more, and so on and so forth. Please, can you elaborate on that? And the last thing that I wanted to talk about is the understanding of the social welfare department when we talk about the children or child in detention and so on and so forth. Is that applies same thing as the welfare department, or have you categorized the ages of the people when it comes to children as it applies to the Department of Social Welfare Bill Act, which is an act now? Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Department?
Chairperson, I'm accompanied by colleagues here, but firstly let me respond to the change in medical parole with respect to people who become better while they're outside. I'm speaking not as a doctor, but I should think once we've got an opinion from medical practitioner that individual X or inmate X should be released because of the terminal illness that he or she has, we oblige. But as to whether the rationale for reincarceration becomes an issue, it's something that we need to discuss here. One, I should think it is also important to know that being in prison is not a good condition to be in. Social and environmental aspects also have an impact on the health of an individual. A person might be terminally ill or seriously ill, but when he is around those who are close to him or her, there may be other social and psychological impact around it. I might be perhaps out of line when I cite a situation of a number of people who might have gone through that situation. The case in point is the Libyan person who was released who was terminally ill. It might be controversial. But be as it may, it is very difficult for us to determine as to when an individual is going to die. And if we accept that principle, and therefore attendant to other issues that emanate from the process, and yes, there might be legislation in various countries that if you become better, you need to be reincarcerated. But my colleagues and the team here will be able to perhaps to embark further on this matter. It is common knowledge also that family becomes the pillar stone and the cornerstone of one's health situation. There might be cases wherein health issues need to be attended to. But this is not for debate, but it's something that we need to take into account when we further strengthen that discussion on this matter. My colleagues will be able to respond on some of the issues in incarceration framework, remand detention, the risk management thereof, the 24-month period, and the social welfare of children. I would like to give opportunities to my colleagues. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to respond also on the medical parole issue, maybe starting there. Amongst the documents distributed to this committee was a table we did looking comparatively at other countries. There's, even talking about the United States, it differs from state to state. It's a policy decision at the end of the day, but the motivation in the way that this bill is drafted is currently if you were granted medical parole, it was only your medical condition taken into account. We've now, since we've opened the grounds for medical parole, added in other factors, the low risk of reoffending, which has to be analyzed, as well as that there must be a space where the person can be placed out. So it's in doing this balancing act that once a person will now be placed on medical parole, that you would be convinced that there's a low risk of reoffending. And it's not just the medical condition that creates the low risk of reoffending. It's taking into account all the factors around the crime that this person committed. So somebody might be really terminally ill, even in the final phase, but if that risk profile does not match up, it won't be the only factor to release somebody upon. That was why the consideration is that if somebody now is actually released under this new policy of medical parole, it would be in such a condition that if that person recovers, it shouldn't necessarily amount to the person being returned to our centers, because we would have taken a holistic view of the person. So that's the balancing act in looking at Section 79, which will be more unpacked if we go clause by clause. On the incarceration framework, I understand the ideals, and we went back to actually the committee deliberations on PMG notes, and this was all discussed with the NCCS, because the incarceration framework decision wasn't an easy decision to be taken. It was taken in consultation with the NCCS, because the bill set must be developed between the NCCS and the National Commissioner. And having looked at all the factors, we realized that it will not be possible. And then actually we were overtaken by a constitutional court judgment. When this note was written that was distributed to the committee, we should actually have updated it, because on the 30th of September this year, the constitutional court in the Van Vuren case ruled that in looking at lifers in that case, but it would apply to other categories as well. We always applied a different policy to lifer sentence before 2004. The court actually went further and said you have to now apply not, because what we try to do with lifers, we try to create only two regimes for lifers, that you have the one sentence before 2004 and the one sentence after 2004. So the current situation was 20 years before 2004 is a minimum period and 25 thereafter. The court came and said no. You have to treat these people in terms of the least severe punishment applicable to the person at the point of sentencing. And in the DCF history, we actually had three policy periods for lifers before 2004. There's a category of 10 to 15 years, and there's other categories for 20 years. So the court came and said, we can't do this. So if we today pass an incarceration framework with now specific categories of crimes and specific, and we try and equalize the kind of parole conditions, we couldn't do it. We would still have to treat people who have been sentenced to long sentences before the date on which this new bill will come into operation in terms of the policy which DC has applied on the day that person was sentenced. That's why going forward, the decision we took is that let's rather stick with the policy we currently have, which is captured in Section 73 of the Act at the moment. That is the policy framework for parole, and if we don't amend that going forward, there will only be the two regimes in South Africa. If you look at other countries, most other countries, if you do a parole search, they will always talk to before 87 and after 87, before 99 and after 99, when they change their parole policy. So we're trying to avoid amending it again and again, but what they presented to this portfolio committee or to Parliament and saying that the incarceration framework could achieve is unfortunately not possible. And the Constitutional Court now confirmed this on the 30th of September. So it was a good ideal to strive towards, but it's not practical at the moment. Those are the only two I wanted to respond to. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will speak to the issues attending relating to remand detention. In general, we remain unsighted of previous convictions, particularly where remand detainees would have previously served custodial penalties. But to the extent that they would have been remand detainees before being convicted, found guilty, and serving a custodial penalty, we would have that information. It's a matter that we will have to explore whether we have to include in the basket of issues that we have to consider as we do our risk profiling. The thinking in real terms is that the risk profiling methodology should always be revised every 2 or 3 years, taking into consideration, for instance, developments in technology. So if I am an IT geek, so to speak, I obviously should not have a BlackBerry because that's a very, very sophisticated tool with which I can continue to commit more crimes. So there has to be some form of research and development within the department on what is the impact of technology, as an example, on the risk profiling methodology that the department employs. As I say, this is intended to be done for a period of 2 to 3 years, and you constantly revise this. But this is a matter that we obviously have to confer with other departments on whether or not, at what stage should we be cited about on that information. It obviously has merit to consider that. In respect to the 24-month period, proposed period for remand detention, we have consulted quite extensively on that proposal, and the consensus is that 24 months is perfectly reasonable. And consultations have been held with the South African Police Services, Social Development, Department of Justice, National Prosecuting Authority, and there is consensus that is reasonable. Without really going into the detail, but it's important in this respect, what happens in the interim is that the Department of Correctional Services, the Remand Detention Facility, will always update the investigating officer, the prosecutor, that you have got Loiso Chafta here. He's been here for 6 months now. And after a year, you send another notification so that between the investigating officer and the prosecutor, more work needs to be done to ensure that they expedite whatever needs to happen in respect to that particular remand detainee. After 18 months, of course, you send another alert. You can call it a red alert, by which time they should know that 24 months is about to elapse. And if they've done everything that they ought to have done, you have a provision that enables the police and the prosecution to motivate to a court of law that remand detention should be extended for that particular remand detainee. Of course, there must be good reasons why it has to be extended. And if there is no persuading motivation, then that person should be considered for release. Release in the same fashion as would normally attend somebody being released on bail. So it's conditional. It's not like the case goes away, the investigation goes away, the prosecution goes away. It's just that the person is removed from remand detention. So that is the framework, so to speak. Chairperson, pardon me, I may not have gotten the last question by Wabunkrof, but the law permits the Department of Correctional Services to have children as remand detainees. I think it's Section 28 of the Child Justice Act. So the important point is that there must be proper coordination, particularly in respect to standards, between correctional services, the South African Police Services, particularly correctional services and social development in respect to remand detention of children in trouble with the law and the South African Police Services. The point that the commissioner was making is that I think it's 28 subsection 2 which provides all these redress mechanisms for children in detention in police cells which are not on the surface in law, which are not available to children in detention in correctional services and or social development. And what we're trying to do, what we're proposing is that that section 28 subsection 2 of the Child Justice Act should be evenly available to all children in detention. I think it reads explicitly, children in detention in police cells. That is the mischief around that is the deficiency with the formulation of that particular clause. So it on the surface, it says only children in detention in police cells. And what we're saying is that those measures for the redress should be evenly available to all children in detention, correctional services, and in social development, which would include those children who are managed by a private contractor who is contracted by the state. So by definition, those children who are in a Busasa facility, as an example, should have access to those rights. Thanks.
Any more from your side, or can we move on? Do you want to add to?
Yeah. Chairperson, on what colleague Jeff Luiso has indicated on the length of detention of 24 months, the rationale thereof, I should think the history about people being kept for longer periods in our facilities becomes more of a problem. It also becomes a problem for Department of Correctional Service from a cost perspective. We're keeping people for the longer periods and we need to feed and clothe them. And it is becoming completely unacceptable for us because we carry a cost that is unjustifiable for us. We need to be dealing with people in our facilities who are sentenced and therefore be able to account for the budget that we receive. If we receive people saying for 7 years that has been a case in the past or more, the cost thereof should not be in our budget. I should think that's another issue that we want to motivate this. But as it has been motivated, we've consulted extensively, and there is a unanimous position by all stakeholders that 24 months is a reasonable period for detention. Thanks, Chairperson.
All right. We're hearing what you're saying. We will go away and process it ourselves. Just on that last one, 24 months, you understand that from our point of view, our position is that by the time you arrest Vincent Smith, you should have sufficient to take him to court. The Minister of Justice talks about court readiness and so on. So whilst we accept that there will be a 24 month, but for us it must be managed downwards. I mean, that you can take as given that will come from our side. And I think this point made by Mr. Self is also something that is very important around the current crime versus what he might have done in the past. Because you might get Vincent Smith, who's there for the third time, but today sentenced for shoplifting, but has been sentenced in the past for murder and rape and then put in with somebody. Those are the type of things that certainly you would look at. It's things that we are going to look at ourselves and come back to you on those ones. The incarceration framework as well. We hear what you're saying, man. It was important that we get that type of understanding because it's going to assist us going forward. And then just, I'm not sure if Robin Dove was the last point. I don't know if you want to put the point. I understood Robin Dove was saying, are we as correctional services aligned with the Department of Social Development in terms of this is the category of a child, this is that. I thought that's what he was saying, so I'm not sure if you answered it. The question is, when we talk about child, do we have a universal definition of a child, whether we're DCS, whether we're the police, whether we are social development? I think that's the point that he was making. Are you confirming that it is the case?
Chair, thanks for the clarity. We are on the same page on the definition of a child.
And then, of course, the final one, the one around reincarceration, we hear what you're saying. We will listen to what South Africans are saying. We will look at all the aspects of it and then take it from there. So around that, I think there's clarity. I was trying to summarize it so that members, when they ask further questions, don't cover these matters because it's really just for our information, not debating them at this point. Mamungwenya and then Mr. Max.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, it's true, Chairperson, you have covered me on some of the explanation. I might look like repeating, but maybe I'm asking something different. In terms of the uniform, I want to check that, because I've got no doubt, Chair, that we are going to pass this bill, because this is something that we always fight for. Even last week, we're talking about inmates that are sitting in a waiting trial more than 7 years. I believe maybe the department decided to have a starting point of 24 months. But I don't hear, Chair, in terms of the SARS, that how SARS is going to make sure that they do their work in terms of these 24 months. Because it looks like if we gave them the 24 months, we still gave them time to relax. But Chairperson raised that we are going to take this matter to the community so that we can hear their views. We are going to take it from there. Chair, in terms of the uniform, I wanted to get from the department that are they ready about the uniform? We are not going to counter a problem of having saving providers that are going to sew this uniform. Are they going to make sure that the inmate in their workshop, they make this uniform? Or are they going to have a service provider? Thank you.
Mr. Max?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, very short. Oh, in this document, the draft Correction Service Matters Amendment Bill, the document, not the presentation, left it. On page number 5, on top B, it indicates that inmate may be detained in a police yard, but not for longer than a month, unless a longer period is authorized by the National Commissioner. And then on page 13, 49I3, subsection 3, if the period of 7 days expires, the General of the South African Police Service must apply to the National Commissioner for extension of such period. The only concern I have is with regards to the practicality of this particular to X. With regards to, because there's no provision made that or his or her designated official, whatever, does it mean that the National Commissioner have to sign these things personally, or is there any provision to actually let somebody else, a center manager or something, authorize those things, or make the necessary arrangements? Page 23 of the same document, section 79.8 is already addressed by Honourable Member herself. The Minister must make regulations regarding the process and procedures to follow in the consideration and administration of medical parole. Is there any time frame in which the Minister have to execute that particular responsibility? Thanks.
Thank you very much. Sir, let me just around the one police custody. You just need you to explain to us over and above what Mr. Max is saying. You spoke about a detainee can be released to the police for 7 days. What does that mean? Does that mean that you'll take Vincent Smith out of Sun City in Johannesburg or Deep Blue, give him to the police, and they have total custody of him for those 7 days? He doesn't come back to our center. Where does he sleep? We hear from other people that police, well, firstly, when we raise the issue of remand detainees, The argument was it can't go to the police because they're not trained to do that. Now you are saying to us, we must give them to the police for 7 days. Where do they sleep, these young men and ladies, or whoever they might be? Because we are also told that the cells are not suitably furnished for somebody to stay there. But we are saying here that they must be put there for 7 days. So the one hand, we argue that we can't do it when the portfolio committee says, go and do it, because it's not our baby. On the other hand, you say, well, let's give them for 7 days. We just need a bit of clarity from your side, because when we engage with communities, we must be able to decide, what does the 7 days handing over to the police, what does it mean really in practical terms? What do you do with the individual when you take him out of our center? If you could just explain that over and above the issues that have been raised by, and Mamgwenya didn't mean SARS, she was meaning SEPS, okay? So if you can just talk to us on those two matters, then we might open up for another round if there is, but if you could just answer those questions for us. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Chairperson. A detainee gets surrendered to the police explicitly for purposes of enabling the police to further their investigation. The only other time when correctional services permits for a surrender of a remand detainee, it is to the police and the prosecution for purposes of further charges that are not related to why he is in remand detention in the first place, for further charges to be preferred against that particular remand detainee. So he has a remand detainee, he's in this particular remand detention facility. He is wanted, or he is wanted for purposes of further charges being preferred against him in another court or in another system. So he gets surrendered for that purpose. That is fine. The problem is when he is surrendered to the police for further investigation. That's where the problems are. Now, how does it come about? Loiso says to the investigating officer, I want to confess. I was on this thing with Tom Moyane and Denise Dlagan. And I want to take you out. I want to take you, the investigating officer, to point out these two accomplices and to point out where we hid the cash and where the firearms are, etc., etc. Where did you commit the murder, etc., etc. Now, it's a very unpredictable scenario because you just will not know when Tunumzi is going to show up so that he is pointed out. So the reasonable thing that we're proposing is that at least a period of 7 days should be the norm. The person should continue the detention under the custody of the investigating officer, and in the form that we are proposing, that is to be amended, the investigating officer will say, I'm Loiso Jafta, I'm the investigating officer, I'm responsible for the continued detention of this person. He will be kept in this police station. We will provide him with, in other words, all the norms attending remand detention have to continue attending this particular person. The problem is that with the existing system, Loiso gets surrendered to the custody of the investigating officer. Now, he doesn't come back so that he gets taken to court on the appointed date, time, and place. And who is in trouble with the court is the head of the prison, because the J7 would have said, you are remanded in custody in some city. But subsequently, the police come in and ask for this person to be surrendered to them for purposes of further investigation, and the contempt of court attends the head of the prison. So that is how it comes about. Now, it being unpredictable, we then say 7 days, but if you continue to need this person, then motivate why you should get an extension. Now, in organized crime investigation, you may very well have somebody who is in Joburg, but he has committed a crime in the Northwest, he's committed a crime in the Eastern Cape, he's committed a crime in KZN. So 7 days may just not be adequate for that kind of an investigation. And it may be an investigation that leads to other crimes for which he is not in remand detention at that particular point in time. So it is strictly for that purpose that it comes about, and the proposed mechanism for managing it. Thanks, Chair.
thank you. Maybe just to also continue and just be more practical also on the explanation of my colleague. The question was also, where are these people incarcerated whilst they're in police custody? Normally they will be in police cells where they are being detained, but obviously we cannot account exactly whether it will be the police cell, but that is the understanding. Chair, also, you know, there's also identification parades where they are taking this remand detainees. As explained, that it's a common tendency that people will commit crime all over South Africa, and it will take sometimes, if the court is scheduled for 14 days and the person is, for example, in Cape Town in Paulsmoor, they need the person in Johannesburg. So it takes sometimes more. And I think we need also to see this broader in the sense of a regulatory framework, at least, that there's not an open-ended way of just keeping the offenders, because the current system don't have days linked to that. It's just they take the offender. There is a policy, but there's no date that is saying 7 days. There must be then proper reasons and motivation for that. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I can also mention that the first period of a month, the first situation where there's no correctional center within a magisterial district, in contradiction to the other 7 days period of detention. Then the further issue was the mentioning of the national commissioner in that particular section. It's a normal way of drafting. Normally such a provision will be delegated to where it's practical to be exercised. Then on the medical parole regulations by the minister, there's no particular time frame, but in order to put into operation the particular section, we'll need regulations to do that, so that will follow soon after the promulgation of the particular section.
Chairperson, I should think there's a question that was raised by Mamgwenya on the question of uniform. I should think the issue of uniform, Chairperson, in the broader context of our motivation here is that where it is practicable, as you have seen in our facilities, where we can source the material for uniform, it will be done by our offenders. But where the conditions do not permit, it might be outsourced. But in the main, we would like to do most of the things in our own facilities. So this is an issue that we want to deal with personally, because we have offender labor. It's things that we're not dealing with huge numbers of people that we are tending to. Now, with respect to the question of SAPs, how they will do their work within the 24-month framework, I should think my colleagues have been able to explain this extensively, in that it will be a process between the police and the prosecutors, that the process of dealing with these cases is speeded up. We are creating an environment that we don't want to have remand detainees in our facilities for a longer period. The bilateral discussions that we hold with the police and justice will sort of spearhead the process that they do their work, precisely because for us, having these people in our facilities is a problem. And therefore, it also leads to other issues of overcrowding. Because if we have people staying in our facilities for longer periods, we have a problem wherein we'll always be seen as not doing our job in terms of the large number of people who are kept in our facilities. If we look in terms of the ATDs or the remand detainees in our facilities, they constitute around 30 to 35%. And that is part of the problem where we have overcrowding. If the wheels of justice would move faster, we'll be able to deal with this matter also effectively and efficiently. I think, Chair, in the main, we will try to respond to some of the key issues, unless we have missed some, but my colleagues and I have try to give you a sense as to what the proposal is all about. Thanks, Chair.
Baba, though, who had indicated he wanted to, unless you are ready, you're happy, Baba. Thank you. Mamgwen. Nyanda.
Thank you, Chairperson. Concerning the uniform, I just want to find out, at the present moment, the inmate's uniform, is it done by the inmates? Because last I remember, the uniform was done in Witbank in Mpumalanga, or is still coming from that site, or you will have the new center that is going to do that? I just want to get a clarity, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. The uniform uniform for offenders has been manufactured not only in Witbank, it's been distributed countrywide, so each and every region or province do have textile workshops where they are manufacturing. So the same principle will be applicable on the remand detainees, just to spread the manufacturing equally, and then it's more practical. Thank you, Chair.
Last round of any questions or clarity if there are. If we don't have any, then I'm happy. No more? Okay. Thank you very much. Let's just indicate to you, I mean, you've heard some of the sentiments. I mean, the last thing I want to emphasize around the last discussion we've had is around this police custody story. We really have to think about it. We're going to have to be, you're going to have to come up with a strong argument to convince us. I mean, I am just sitting and thinking here. Again, I didn't get a satisfaction. I get a sense that you're saying that a remand detainee will be taken out of our, when I say our, correctional services facility, given to the police 7 days because that might be practical. But we have no control of where that person's sleeping tonight, whether it's at home or in a facility that is conducive. Because my understanding is that Cabinet took a decision that remand detention becomes the responsibility of correctional services. That's what Cabinet took. We have a white paper and all sorts of things that says this is how you must treat all South Africans. And we almost are now handing that person over to SAPS without any guarantees almost. That says, look, whilst he or she's in your custody, these are at least the minimum standards that must be adheres to. So I'm just saying that you would need to think about it. I'm almost sure there's going to be lots of it's going to be a point of interaction even with the community outside there. And we don't want to go to the community outside there not clear in our own mind what it is. So those are the type of things that that if you are able to further crystallize, you can interact with us so that by the time we go to the public, we have a meaningful engagement. We don't want to go to the public, come back to you and go to the public. But I think we need to give direction, all of us, whilst we're listening to the public. Thank you very much for that interaction. We have a sense of what is going to be before us. As I indicated, we will probably advertise in this weekend's newspapers for comments, and it normally runs for about 2 weeks. By the time members come back in January the 18th, you would have a summarized document of what the public are saying, and then we'll agree which stakeholders we would engage with, continue to engage with yourselves, and hopefully, as I indicated, by a month after we've returned, I'll be ready to take us to Parliament for its final ratification. Thank you very much. I what's the time? 10:30. I know that you were going to come to give us some briefing around the state of where we are in terms of the parole boards, the chairs being appointed, and that type of thing. Have you? I see there was a presentation given to us. I'm not sure if anybody's going to talk to it. Yeah, your name? There was a presentation that says the purpose of the presentation is to brief the portfolio committee on the appointment of chairs, the outcome of the audit for those who qualify, and the status of sentence plans. Is anybody going to present that to us? You are. Thank you very much. If you can go ahead with that one.
Okay. Chairperson, I'll just be providing a status report on the issues that you have mentioned. The first one is the appointment of chairpersons, and if you look at our presentation, what we have there as a status is that as a department, we are currently processing the memorandum currently at the Office of the Minister for finalization, because in terms of the policy, the minister is the one who has to appoint, you know, the chairpersons, the new chairpersons of the parole board, so that they all have the same starting date and the same, expiry date in terms of their term of office. And
current arrangements that we have made at the department is that because the work must be done in terms of processing of the work by the parole boards, by CMCs, from CMCs, the current chairpersons of correctional supervision and parole boards are appointed on a month-to-month basis, and this arrangement has been extended to the 17th of December this year to allow for finalization of the process referred to above. And when it comes to the outcome of the audit of those who qualify for parole, I think we all know that there is the ministerial task team that has been appointed to conduct, to do, amongst others, audits of all correctional centers of cases that would qualify for parole and backlogs. And this team will also report on psychiatric patients, elderly offenders, disabled and ill offenders. And what you need to report to Chairperson is that the task team is busy with the audit, and as such, no report is available. And what for, as a matter of interest, again, Chairperson, we just want to indicate that we are currently busy with another audit of LIFAs who will be affected by the court ruling regarding San Firen. I think Lorette has spoken to this matter earlier on, that there is a decision, the court ruling taken by the court, that this LIFA was sentenced between 1987 and 1994, and he therefore needs to be dealt with in terms of that old directive. So this will affect all LIFAs who were also sentenced between that period. So what we are indicating now is that we are currently busy identifying all those LIFAs who are falling within that category. And regions will be reporting on from end of this month, because they have developed a regional implementation plan that will indicate as to what steps will be done, you know, to identify all those cases, and also the recalculation of the minimum detention period, so that they should also be in line with that old directive. And with regards to the sentence plan backlog, how we are addressing that as a department, we're seeing correctional sentence plans are currently conducted by the interim correctional assessment officials who also work as security officials. I think we all know that we have a capacity and resource problem as a department in terms of staffing, and if, for instance, we have to implement our offender habitation path, this is the way that we have to take the having the correctional assessment officials. So we don't have permanent correctional assessment officials. We only have the interim structures, and they are doing some work in terms of the correctional sentence plan. And the strategic plan of the department outlines clearly how backlog is going to be addressed. We are saying we need to reduce backlog, the 5093 of correctional sentence plans, by 10%. That is, we need to have 5093 a reduction of backlogs by end of this financial year. But for now, the status is that we have reduced these backlogs by 8549 during the second quarter of this current financial year. And we also want to sign memorandum of understanding on learnership project with University of Pretoria and UNISA on the 11th of November, that is tomorrow, and on the 2nd of December this year, respectively. Postgraduate criminology students will assist department in developing correctional sentence plans, and this initiative will have positive effect in reducing backlogs. And what we are doing currently as head office is that we are conducting a correctional sentence plan workshop around the country. So far, we have gone to Eastern Cape, Free State, Northern Cape, and LMN. We went directly to Northwest Province and KZN regions, where we have actually, where 505 officials attended. And this was actually an attempt by head office to improve compliance with regards to the implementation of correctional sentence plans by management areas. So, Chairperson, that takes me to the end of this brief status report.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me just understand this thing. Correctional sentence plan, in my mind, is a roadmap towards rehabilitation for somebody, isn't it? Fine. You now have 50,000 people without a correctional sentence plan. And you are targeting 5,000 a year, or even take 8,000 a year. It's going to take you 6 years. 86 is a 48. It'll take you 6 years. So if Cindy happens to be the unlucky one, not in this year's 5,000, not in next year's 5, she will be in the 5,000 in year 6. It probably would be when she's ready for release or for parole. You hear what I'm saying? She'll probably be ready for release or parole. She's sitting there for 6 years because she doesn't have this roadmap for rehabilitation. Does it mean she's going to come out totally unrehabilitated? Probably as illiterate as she was when she went in, if she was somebody that was illiterate. Is that what this means practically? This is the problem that I've had since I've been here. I don't understand what the sentence plan entails. Does it mean that you sit down with Vincent, you interview him, find out his strengths and weaknesses, and decide it's best for you to do this because that's what you like to do or that's where your strengths are? I don't understand. We talk to service providers, and on many occasions the service providers have said to us, you know, if DCS opened their doors to us, and I know you have to accredit them and so on, if DCS opened their door to us, we could run a campaign to reduce this backlog so that everybody that is in there at least has some sort of a program that says, if you must be a better South African after you are released, we recommend that you do ABCD. I just have a difficulty that your current targets mean that if Cindy is the unlucky one and she's been sentenced to 5 years, she'll move out of there without having any rehabilitation because there was no plan. In other words, she would have just been put in with the bunch that... Am I understanding this thing correctly? If I'm understanding it correctly, then I'm suggesting that you're going to do something drastic to change it, because we can't have a situation where somebody's going to be there for 5 years, and because we're only doing 5,000 a year of the 50,000, that person might be the unlucky one. Just clarify that one for me. And then secondly, ma'am, both with the appointment of the parole board chairperson, you indicate that the minister and the audits for the lifers, that's in the work in progress. But you're not giving us a sense of your time frame. You know, you could tell us when the time frames are, because all these things would revolve around a functional parole board, for instance. For many of these people that are phoning us day in and day out saying, I was due to be reviewed, not even released, but just reviewed by the parole board. I've not received my date. These things are happening every day from all sorts of centres. And then clearly, of course, the audit around the lifers. Just give us a time frame. My fear is if there's no time frame, people drag their heels. Whereas if we say to them, in your centre, Mr. X, every center has got a head of center. We should be able to say to him within a week, tell me who are your people that are incarcerated, life is beyond that date, and all we need to do then is to consolidate it up top. It can't take us a month to do that. It can't take us, it's not one individual going around. Why don't we decentralize the responsibility, feed it up to us, and for us to consolidate it at the top? I just have a sense that the urgency around these matters, ma'am. You need to give us time frames. If you don't, we will give you time frames and hold you to those time frames. Thanks. Kwinamuzi, it seems like you want to speak, and then National Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the process of appointing parole board chairpersons, correctly, the interviews and everything has been done, and we're in the process of receiving the submissions from the provinces. We have looked at, thus far, I think it is two reasons that have reached the minister's office, that is the Western Cape and that is for Gauteng. And what we have suggested to the commissioner is that for practicalities purposes, we should actually extend the contract of the existing parole board up to January. And I'm saying that because when we sat with the NCCS recently, it was clear that there needs to be a mass intake, that's going to be programming training that these people have to be put through, especially in instances where we have identified new chairpersons. But as well, Chair, there are certain centers or areas where we have identified certain weaknesses in terms of some of the people that are proposed. And we have suggested that it might be more feasible to have that program have a cutoff of January to have everyone on board, even if appointments are approved by the minister tomorrow, but that people be given a date of starting at the end of January. So that there is one proper handover where there's going to be changes, but so that we also allow where there's going to have to be a need to identify other appointees so that there's sufficient time to do that. The intention, Chairperson, was to have finalized all the appointments by the end of November, because we understand that December is generally a dead month, administratively speaking, and that January, that's the ideal time for when all parole board chairpersons and vice chairpersons, chairpersons, members of the community should have been through, and people starting to do their work.
Saying 1st of March, everybody should, 1st of February, I beg your pardon, everybody should be in place. Thank you very much. Around the issue around sentence plans, does anybody want to talk to us? Are we understanding it correctly? Before you respond, let's take Mamnyanda and then Mamgwenya. And then Siskon.
Thank you, Chairperson. As we were saying, that the other regions, for instance, here it's written Northwest Province. When are they going to Limpopo and Mpumalanga, because they are not here? KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Free State, they've been there, but what about these two provinces? Are they going to stay there until, as the chairperson was saying, for 7 years? No, chairperson, this is uncalled for.
Thank you, Chair. My question is on the guidelines of the document of the chairpersons or deputy chairperson for parole board. I think we need to get that document as members. And I believe that we're supposed to be part of these interviews. But if the department have started and not consulting us, I don't know how do they do this. Because we need to monitor also. Although the minister is the one that is making a final. But for this work to make sure that we have done effectively, we as members of parliament, we need to be part of that. And I think Chairperson need to get this document not later than next week. Before we leave, we need to get it, the guidelines of this. It might happen some of the centers will phone us meanwhile we are on recess to say we are interviewing. So all of us must have that document that is guiding us how to do this work. Thank you.
It's cool.
Thanks, Chair. I think I'm covered by you and by member Mamu Winnie. But mine is to ask that, in fact, is to say, you know, I was going to say also, who is doing this appointment? Is it the department alone without consulting a committee or so on? Because mine is to say members of parliament are supposed to be part of the appointment. And secondly, Chairperson, you know, I'm a bit worried about the how part. You know, the department is saying they will reduce the backlog with 10%. And how are they going to do that? They must explain to us so that at least some of us that is not aware, they must know. How are they going to do that? And lastly, Chairperson, the testing, the reports. This report from the testing, when are they going to, you know, when are they going to give this report? Because I'm a little bit worried to see here there's a report, that the task team is going to give, but we don't know when. So thanks, Chair.
Department?
Chairperson, I want to address the concern that you raised on the CSPs, especially taking into account that this is a roadmap for offenders in a process of rehabilitation. Perhaps the colleague who presented was not privy to the fact that we had a mid-term strategic review last week, wherein, as management, we took a principal decision on this matter that all regional commissioners, including and headed by corrections as a core business, must speed up the process of looking at this matter with a critical eye. We have noted that the low levels of the attempts of reaching the targets that have been set, as you correctly said, that would not be able to achieve the intended goal. Therefore, all the regional commissioners and everybody involved in the process of rehabilitation has been given a clear mandate that by the end of this financial year, we should have a clear picture that the numbers are upped, so that we should have a clear picture as to where things are moving. We've taken cognizance of the fact that there is a need for staffing, but that should not be a constraint. It needs to be taken very seriously by the fact that we're building up capacity within our facilities. And therefore, your concern is well placed, Chairperson. We're dealing with this matter. The fact that we are dealing with 5,000 or 8,000 people per annum does not address the issue. So we have given a clear mandate and clear directive that this matter should be attended with speed that it deserves. Now, with respect to the guidelines, I should think MEM will comply in providing with the guidelines with respect to the chairpersons and the deputy chairperson. But I must admit here publicly that I'm not aware, perhaps I need to be briefed as to whether the appointment and the interviews that we're doing as parole boards has to be co-shared with yourselves. I'll find out as to whether this is a process, because I'm taking into account that you have a busy care schedule. If we're to do this together, this will not be achieved. But yes, it may. If it's a directive that needs to be done, we shall see how best we can mitigate the process and the risks associated with it. With respect to the task team, the report, I should think certainly I'll liaise with my colleagues here who have made this presentation. I should think there is an end date as to when the report has to be given. But Kinumzi here has raised his hand because we believe in time frames, Chairperson. There's nothing that is open-ended. Thank you.
Thank you. Through you, Chair. Honourable members will recall that when the minister appointed the task team, that was shared with the committee, including the fact that at some point their time frame was extended because it was clear at some point that they would not have finished the national audit by the end of I think it was June or July. And the time frame that we had committed to the portfolio committee was that the ministerial task team would conclude its report by December of this year. And that is the deadline that has been set, that the final report would then be presented to the minister by December this year, covering all the areas of focus by the task team.
Just to confirm the issues raised by Mamnyanda, that there were two provinces that were not included. In fact, when we talk about it being speeded up, we're talking about all the provinces around the country. Fine. So hopefully that will have answered Mamnyanda's question. Ma'am, do you want to say something?
I just wanted to give some explanation with regards to the audit of the LIFAS, that the process has started. The instructions were sent to the regions on the 8th of October that they should start, you know, conducting the audit of those LIFAS that are affected by this court ruling. And last week, Friday, we sat with all the regions to map the way forward in terms of their implementation. And as a result, the regions are reporting, you know, about, you know, the work that they're supposed to be doing. And remember, the chairperson, it's a process because we need to look at, you know, all the information that should be submitted, you know, by the case management, the reports that must be submitted, compiled by the case management committees, you know, to the parole boards. But up to now, the identification process has started of all those cases. And by end of November, then the reports, the regions will be giving us, you know, a report that will be consolidated by us as head office.
Chair, maybe just to clarify also, the commissioner gave a deadline of a week for the physical audit. I think audits is being used loosely here. The numbers have been confirmed already that we're talking about in the categories of lifers, and the first category would be about 400 lifers. It's now the process of how do we deal with the individual, each individual who's identified. That's the bigger audit of getting individual plans around each one, but the numbers crunching has been done.
That makes us a bit easier. I thought you were talking about the month just for the number crunching, and that was not going to be acceptable to us. Thank you very much to the department, to the commissioner and his team, and to the minister. I think we've reached the end of this meeting. Members will stay for a while, not more than 5 minutes. We meet the department next week, Sunday the week. On the quarterly report, so we meet each other on the 17th. And then finally, we meet the department on the 24th together with DPW to look at the issues that we had agreed. We will give you 3 months' notice, or 3 months' grace to look at the Kimberley specifically. Those are the two meetings that we have scheduled. And I'm sure those have gone out, Cindy, to the departments already. But let's listen to what the commissioner has to say.
Thanks, Chairperson, for giving us this opportunity to interact with yourselves. I just have a slight problem about next week. The department will be engaged in an international tour with senior management in particular. And I would be amiss if I don't report this to yourselves, because I would like to send a delegation that would not be able to respond appropriately. We therefore request your indulgence that you may have to look into the scheduling, because we are leaving this Saturday, and the 17th is when we are, as a team, doing what you call benchmarking and best practice with a view of empowering management and leadership of the Department of Correctional Services, that we should not find ourselves ducking and diving on issues that are within our mandate. I'm not sure, Chairperson, as to this matter at your convenience with the team will be reconsidered. I therefore request that you consider our request. I'm aware that it's coming towards the end of the year, but we also have to meet our mandate, and because we come and report to yourselves, I sincerely believe that we need to have leadership that is empowered and able to do what is expected of them. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, no, Commissioner, you know, when I came to this committee, Cindy had jet black hair. 18 months later, Cindy is almost going grey because of the problems we have with this type of thing. Because Cindy does communicate, you do get to your program in time. And to be ambushed at this minute, Babalido, Bugunzi, I mean. But no, it's fine. No, it's fine. Look, we take your point, Gunamuzi. It's good that the inspecting judge is here. We had scheduled the inspecting judge for the 24th as well. Now, I'm not sure if we could ambush you for next weekend. I don't know if you're ready for next weekend, because then you, instead of doing it on the 24th, you could come and give us your presentation on the 17th, which means that we will not have a unproductive day next week. And then we will have to reschedule your administrative report for some time in the future. But we are going to see you on the 24th on a very serious matter around Kimberley and those type of things. So are you indicating you're willing to do that? All right. We change as we're moving. So the inspecting judge will come and present his annual report next week, Wednesday. Cindy will communicate with you. And then the 24th, we'll see Department of DPW and Department of Correctional Services around those other matters. Gwinamuzi?
Chair, it was on a lighter note to say that, as far as my sources inform me, Cindy's grey hair is attributed to you and the portfolio committee.
Yeah. All right. We are
we are dismissing you before you create more damage. Just go out of here. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's going to be 5 minutes. Members have just been given the program for next year. Just to again get our act together, we're meeting with the inspecting judge next week, and we'll go through his annual report. The week thereafter, the 24th, we'll meet with the Department of Correctional Services and the Department of Public Works to deal with the matters outstanding from 3 months ago. We had also scheduled, you'll recall, a oversight visit to Eastern Cape on the 25th and to Pretoria on the 26th or something like that. Unfortunately, those have been declined. So we've got 2 meetings left. Meeting on Wednesday and a meeting on the 24th, that's when we finish. I'm sure, Cindy, if there are minutes outstanding, you'll have to try and hopefully get them in so that by the time we leave, all minutes and reports that need to be adopted will be adopted. So there are just two meetings left, just for members to understand that. And then if you look at the program, what we are proposing is that when we come back on the 18th, that we just have a brief meeting to look at the public inputs that have come to us after the adverts. Then we immediately go away to Kroonstad and to Zonderwater because those are the only two training facilities for DCS officials. And when we get back the week later, we get stuck into public hearings around the matter that we've discussed today. And pretty much all the way until the 16th, we focus just on processing this report. The only exception being that on the 9th of February, we do the quarterly review of their finances and start checking what we'd asked them to do. You know, you'd recall that our last report that we adopted around the budget, we'd given them time frames and said do this by that time frame. And hopefully on the 19th, when they come and do their annual report, they can talk to some of the specifics that we'd ask them to do in our budget review recommendations. There'll be a State of Nation address. Thereafter, we hopefully will adopt the bill before us. continuous monitoring of our recommendations. And on the end there you see that we will talk to the department around its progress around the new prisons, as well as you'd recall those that went with us to Leeuwkop, we said that Leeuwkop was not an acceptable facility, what they've done about Leeuwkop. So really the first term's program would be the bill and checking on how far they've come with our recommendations in the budget review. That is what we're proposing. If you agree to it, then Cindy can start doing the necessary invitations, booking of venues and so on. The only other issue that I'd want to raise that is that it's just beyond this one, but we might as well talk about it because we can't talk about it when we come back, is a possible visit overseas. You know, we're one of those committees that haven't been overseas. Cindy had suggested that we look at going to China, because you'd recall that when the National Commissioner came back, he said that China had a very good inmate labor sort of program, and also the utilization of TVs and so on for rehabilitation. And we know that Australia has got a very good program around its rehabilitation and incarceration of women. Those are the two that Cindy had thought about. I slept over it last night, and I know that in the USA, New York specifically, there is a facility that focuses on parole, how they handle the parole and that type of thing in the USA. And in the UK, there's a facility that deals with the psychiatric inmates in the UK. So therefore, members must just indicate which two you would prefer, so that Cindy and Paul can at least do some research on them. Or do you want them to do research on all four and to recommend to us when we get back? I don't know how.
I think so.
So they should look at all four
and
make a recommendation in priority as you see it, and then we'll ratify it when we come back. Happiness? And then the program, can we take it as... beg your pardon, Mam Gwenya?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the program is fine for the beginning of 2011. The only change that Cindy can do is this 2010 and make it 2011. Then in terms of the overseas, yes, Chairperson, I agree with you. We're about 15 years now in this correctional committee. We never go outside. That's why we can't even assist the department to change the vision of our centers, because we never gave time as this committee to go outside. So as we've got this form, I'll propose that we must go twice a year. Thank you.
We then take it that the program is adopted. Cindy will do whatever needs to be done around there. And Paul and Cindy will come back with recommendations at our first meeting or soon thereafter, so that you can start the process. And we meet again with the inspecting judge on Wednesday. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.